Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. In this episode, I'm going to be speaking with Wayne Douglas, who is a New Zealander living in Japan, who teaches English and does translations. He is currently writing his book, Under the Rising Sun, which will be on his website, undertherisingsun.com. He is the founder of World Benzodiazepine Awareness Day, which is every year on July 11th, which is Professor Ashton's birthday. He is a frequent guest on Dr. Peter Bregan's podcast. He is also an advocate for the change in the prescribing of benzodiazepines. He is currently working on a self-made documentary based on a speech he gave at the House of Representatives in Japan, which will eventually be on his YouTube channel. Please stay tuned for our post-show talk. Hi, Wayne. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Geraldine. Good to be here.
Yeah, I really appreciate with the time difference of us getting together with me here in the United States and you in Japan that we were able to accommodate doing this interview.
Yeah, great. No problem at all.
So before we get going into how the idea of World Benzodiazepine Awareness Day came about, can you tell me what led you to being prescribed a benzodiazepine and which one you were on and how long you were on it?
Yeah, so actually what happened is I was working in Japan and I woke one night with the room spinning around and I went off to the hospital and had all the tests. They couldn't diagnose anything and so it left me with an ongoing balance problem. And then I saw a specialist on TV and I went and got a referral to see him, and he was considered a world-renowned expert. So I got a referral to see him, and then he told me that I had something wrong with the mid part of my brain called Sylvian aqueduct syndrome. I found out later that wasn't the case at all. I actually had vestibular neuritis, which is inflammation of the nerve of the inner ear, and it causes a single belt of rotational vertigo followed by balance difficulties for about a month thereafter. Anyway, he gave me this shabby diagnosis, and then he prescribed me what I realize now was three different benzodiazepines all mixed together in powder form, an antidepressant, and another drug for circulation.
So he had something compounded with three benzos and an antidepressant and something else all in one?
Yeah, well, actually, the three benzodiazepines were mixed together in powder form in sachets.
Wow.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, and so how did you even, I can't even imagine how you felt on them. And so you started taking it, being a good patient.
Yeah, of course, with the expectation that it's going to make you better and that I really needed it, because he told me that I had this problem with my brain that only about 1 in 100 doctors would be able to treat. And there was no information on the internet back then. So all I could do was place my trust in him. And I did that. And then about, 4 to 6 weeks later, things started to get worse, and I got a couple of new symptoms, like palpitations that I didn't have before. And then after about 4 months, things were getting worse, and when I went back to tell him that things were getting worse, I was handing him notes, keeping a record of my symptoms, and I was handing him notes, and he was saying, oh, it's just recent bad weather. You feel worse when you're washing the dishes because that's a negative activity. It was just, I had problems with my balance standing at the sink and things like this. And he was just passing it off lightly. And after about 4 months, I had all over muscle stiffness. My jaw was locking up. I was getting panic attacks, sensitivity to all sound. I couldn't bear to watch the TV. I was sitting in the lounge with my eyes shut, and I realize now, because I just finished doing a presentation at the Japan House of Representatives with Japan's leading eye specialist, Dr. Wakakura, who's written papers on drug-induced blepharospasm, which is the movement of the eyes and twitching of the face and twitching of the eyes, and I realize now that was an early sign of that, so...
Here's a question for you. I mean, do you know what let's say we had to, like in the Ashton manual, they always give an equivalent for what you were on. Do you know what the equivalent would have been in Valium that he put you on initially?
Yeah, actually, I've got this right here on my website, and it's just been so long, and I've got so many other things going on, I tend to forget. But by memory, it was somewhere around about 30 milligrams of diazepam.
Wow. And how long did you, what year did this happen and how long were you on?
or 40, was it? Yeah, so this happened back in 2000, and I was on the benzodiazepines for 1 year. But I was actually getting what they call, I figure it's referred to as tolerance withdrawal. So that's where you're getting withdrawal reactions even though you're still taking the drug. And that's because of lost drug effect. So even though I was still taking the drug exactly as prescribed, I was actually experiencing withdrawal reactions.
Right, and as most of us do, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I never knew your full story because kind of when you and I got involved, we were just doing advocacy work. So I'm glad we're getting, I think people are going to get to know your story. And it's so for during that year that you're being the good patient and you're taking them and you're getting sicker, at what point do you get your aha moment? Like, how do you find out now that you're sick and what method do you use to come off?
Yeah, so I realized about 4 or 5 months later that the drugs were making me worse, and people that I knew and knew well were telling me, you know, when you're not looking good, this is bad. I think the drugs are not doing you any good. And I had got all these psychological symptoms that I never had before. I had no psychological history at all. And then I was getting all these psychological symptoms like aggression and mood swings and confusion and then my friends were telling me, you know, this is not good. And I knew it wasn't good. And it got really bad. And I was totally running out of energy. I could barely make it to work. And at first I ended up getting taxis. And then I changed hospitals. And then when I changed hospitals, they didn't realize what was going on. You know, it can't be the drugs, you know.
Of course not. It's always you, not the drugs.
Yeah, it was me. And so they give me this other totally absurd diagnosis that's used in Japan. It's called autonomic nervous disorder. Well, that's what it translates to, which suggests that something's wrong with your nervous system. So, okay, it's not the drugs. I now have a nervous system problem. And then they just gave me more benzodiazepines, including Xanax. And then this would later come back to haunt me during my court case, because during my court case, it turned out to be a case of he wasn't suffering from benzodiazepine dependency. He was suffering from autonomic nervous disorder. And this is absolutely mad because, as you know, when you become dependent on benzodiazepines, well, the initial effect of the drug is to suppress nervous system activity, but then due to tolerance, the whole system becomes hyperactive, hyperfunction of the nervous system. And to turn around and label this as autonomic nervous disorder and then say I didn't have that, I didn't have dependency, I had autonomic nervous disorder, it's like we're in a situation where we were expected to rule out smoke to prove fire. My God, benzodiazepine dependency causes hyperfunction of the nervous system. They're expecting us to rule this out to prove dependency. My God, it was the most frustrating court case in the world.
So Wayne, you're mentioning a court case. So just so people understand, you tried in Japan to sue for what happened to you?
Yes, I did. I tried to sue for reparations.
And what was the end result of that? I mean, I know you're just saying how bad it was, but did you keep fighting and where does it stand? What happened?
Yeah, well, I went through every court in every level of the courts in Japan. I started off with the Tokyo Summary Court, mediation for 2 years, the Tokyo District Court, for 2 years, the Tokyo High Court for 2 years, and then I did my Supreme Court appeal during the Fukushima nuclear disaster and mega earthquake and tsunami and everything like that. So I was doing my Supreme Court appeal during radiation fallout, aftershocks and rotational blackouts, and I was writing by candlelight, but I never gave up. And so I managed to get that into the Supreme Court, a shoebox full of information. Professor Ashton helped me out with that. And then she was shining light on that part that I was just talking about hyperfunction of the nervous system and how ridiculous it was to be expected to rule out you know, to prove dependency by ruling out hyperfunction in the nervous system was just totally absurd. And it, you know, talk about lost in translation, and it's this term that they used in Japan for ages now, and it's totally misleading. I don't know, what do you call it? Do you call it a logical fallacy? I mean, the whole thing itself is problematic. The term itself is a fraud, and yet people have come to think of it as the norm. I mean, it's weird. And who came up with the term, and why did they come up with it, and how was it allowed to be accepted into medical practice? My God.
Right. And so every level you went in the court system, you lost all the way to the end?
Well, actually, that's an interesting word, is it? Because I never looked at it as winning or losing. I never looked at it that way. I always looked at it, is there justice or is there not justice? Because as far as I'm concerned, on paper, if we're talking about winning or losing, I reckon I won hands down. And I never expected there was going to be justice. It's just the way it is. They protect the systems. They protect the status quo, the way things are. You know, it's all very convenient, the way it works and the money it produces. So I didn't expect to win. I was hoping to set a precedent. But what I set out to do what was right, what I believed in, and to make it absolutely as difficult as possible to make them rule against me and look good. I wanted to make them look like real assholes in the process, and I think I achieved that. I think.
Then that's a win. You did a good job. Yeah.
I think in that sense, yeah.
And were you able to work during those years?
On and off.
So you are originally from New Zealand, and then you went to Japan because you translate and you teach. So you could do a little bit of work during that time.
Well, actually, during the court case, I was working full time. But then, you know, it takes a toll on you. And when you're doing it while experiencing relapses of withdrawal in a foreign country, in a foreign language, my God, it's one of the most difficult things you can do. And, you know, at one point, I actually burnt right out, and I had to take a year off and go back home. And I was still working on my case from New Zealand with my lawyer. And it got to the point where I just felt like I was going mad. And I thought, that's it. I just have to stop. It doesn't matter. I've come this far, but I just have to throw it all away. And I knew I was getting emails from my lawyer, but I just didn't look at anything for about a month. And then about a month later, I started feeling better. So I thought, well, go and have a look at my email. And I just do one little bit or just one little bit. And then I met him, we've become friends since, and I met him recently, and he goes, yeah, I wonder what happened to you during that time. You went off the radar. So, yeah, it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy at all.
So when we've been harmed like we've been harmed, and we're just trying to live a life normally, but yet there's this desire inside you to fight for justice, which you did. I mean, that's amazing what you were able to accomplish. So during this time, I know you started to write a book. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah.
Was that while the court case, all that was going on? Were you doing that during the year you took off to relax? When did that all start?
So the book started after the Fukushima nuclear disaster and earthquake. I ended up in evacuee housing. I finished my Supreme Court appeal. I got the notification that the case won't proceed because there wasn't an infringement against the Constitution. And then basically, so I ended up in evacuee housing alone, no job, no friends around me, no money, absolutely nothing. I couldn't even afford food. The guy at the local Indian restaurant said, if you ever need anything, just come here and eat for free. And wow, I had nothing. And everything fell down around my ears. And I'm thinking, what can I do here? Do I go home with my tail between my legs, or do I do something? So I chose the latter, and then that's when I got the idea on the book, and that's when I started writing the book. And I spent 4 years writing the initial draft, and then that's when I got the letter from an email in passing from Barry Haslam, who said, oh, we should have a World Benzo Day. And then I'd always wondered, you know, after my court case, I got online, I thought, I wonder if there's anyone else like me, because I didn't have the headspace to look previously. And then I went into the Facebook groups, and I felt like I was walking, it's like you've been at war all this time, and then you're walking through a burnt out village, and you see all these people enchained and crying out, and it was just mad. And I thought, my God. And what really got me is that they're all behind closed doors and they're all exchanging information behind closed doors. And I thought, well, this needs to get out. This needs to get out. You know, nothing's going to change if it's behind closed doors. And it always bothered me. And then this email turned up from Barry Haslam saying, wish you'd have a Will Benzer day. And I used to plan events in my earlier career. And I thought, wow, that's it. So I made this huge decision to put my book down because I had a window of opportunity to write my book and go home and hopefully get my life back. So this decision actually had lifelong implications, and I'm still reeling from it now. But I put the book down instead of finishing it, and I started organizing, establishing World Benzodiazepine Awareness Day. And
so before we start talking about World Benzodiazepine Awareness Day, do you want to tell us what the name of the book is? Just before we leave that discussion, I'd like people to know what you were working on.
Yeah, so I was working on the book, and it's titled Under the Rising Sun. There's work on the book website. I've been meaning to build the website for years, but it keeps falling through and getting pushed to the side. But I got a very good friend working on it now, and it's gonna come to life very soon. And so it'll be undertherisingsun.com. And people will be able to have a good look through and learn about the plot, the characters, the setting, and everything else. And
That'd be fun. And so the book, the undertherisingsun.com, will come about at some point. We'll put a link to that, and we'll put a link to that. Yeah. And so now comes, you start working on World Benzodiazepine Awareness Day, which we're in 2020, so we're coming into the fifth annual WBAD. So tell us about, you know, each year it's getting bigger and bigger. So you must feel really, really good about that. So I see you've been very proactive in Japan. Can you tell us some of the things you've been doing to bring awareness in Japan? And then after that, let's even talk about, where do you see WBAD going in the future?
Yeah, well, it's interesting that you use that word bigger and bigger, because how do you define bigger and bigger? I mean, I would agree that it's getting bigger in the sense that it's becoming more widely known. But for me, WBAD is all about activism. So I tend to measure it by action. And is there more action now than there was before? I'm not so sure about that. I think in the inaugural year, there was a lot of participation, a lot of people coming out and expressing solidarity, and so I tend to measure it by action. But for action, you need to have a team, and I mean, basically WBAD's going through a transition. I think it probably grew a lot quicker than what we were able to accommodate. Everyone works as volunteers, and everyone's you know, up against the wall from drug damages and life damages, and so it's very limited as to what we can achieve. What I think we need to do now is, we do have a board of representatives. I think the board is very disproportionate at present, and being a world global initiative, we need to have broader representation on the board. We need to have an established administration team so that it doesn't all land on one person, so the work can be shared and delegated. I did work on establishing a team at one point. As you know, I worked with you on that and ran it by other members of the administration. But as it turned out, we found it's very important that we maintain the WBAD brand, because it's all about credibility. We need to be credible in the eyes of the public and in the eyes of politicians and medical workers. And so we need to be careful what language we use and what representation we give, and not to mix it with politics, not to mix it with commercial purposes, et cetera, et cetera. And there were a few of those problems. So a decision was made to pull the team page. I actually fought to hold on to it, but I do understand the reasons that it was taken down. But I would like to see this problem addressed. I would like to see protocols put in place. I've been recommending protocols for years now. I'd like to see those put in place so that people are clear on what standard practices and expectations are when representing WBAD. So I think we need to go through a step-by-step process now. Small steps, one step at a time. Develop the board, broader representation, develop an admin team. We need reliable people, dedicated people, motivated people, and sensible people. And then we need to work on reestablishing the team where everyone's clear on what the expectations are. And I think that's where the growth is going to come from, and that's going to lead to the activism that's so desperately needed. One other thing I tried to work on was having a representative in every US state. And as you know, I think you were actually the first to do it, was to get the state recognition. From Massachusetts.
We had Sonia here from Massachusetts. It's funny, I just got a message today from somebody saying, yes, I'll do it for my state. And I wrote back, I said, oh, I sent you that message 2 years ago. But I'll talk to Wayne.
That's the thing, you know. And when I had the team up, you know, there was some concerns that people aren't that active. Well, you know, people are going through difficulties, and I think it's important to give people a chance. And you know, sometimes they're quiet for a while, but then things will improve, and they'll come back on the radar and start doing some things. And it's a difficult one. And I just want to say clearly that I really, really so much appreciate all the work that so many people put in. Well, how amazing that, and there's no way have I turned my back on anyone. I haven't. And,
wonderful, you know, people that have helped over the years. In fact, I'm hoping to go to do something where, because we're in the pandemic right now, I think I've got some really good ideas what people can do from their homes, whether they're sick or not, to give people an idea of what to do. So I'll hold it for that day, because this might be the World Benzodiazepine Awareness Day, but every day is a day to do advocacy work. So it's going to be simple. It's going to be easy, specifically meant for the United States. But if we can do that here, it can be done in other countries. Mm. So it has been, you know, teamwork to get us this far. But
There's a list of things people can do on the website. If people go to the website w-bad.org and just click on Get Involved, and it's got a whole list of high impact activities, low impact activities, most of which can be done online. So there's many ways, and it's also a time to be creative and show leadership.
And things that can be printed out. There's some wonderful pamphlets, wonderful information. It's all done for people to print it out. And there's also a shop. People love their t-shirts and all kinds of stuff. There's little memo pads. So there really has been. It's been a lot of teamwork to get people here. So one of the things I want to hear what you're doing in Japan, because you've already been doing a lot so far.
Yeah, well, actually, I went through a really bad time last year because I tried going back to New Zealand and I just crashed completely. And New Zealand's so expensive now, and I fell into a deep depression, and I ended up coming back to Japan. It was the most difficult thing I ever did in my life, leaving New Zealand knowing that I'd probably go back and there would be no one left. I've only got 3 relatives left, all over 80, including my mum, and it's just not the time I want to be coming back to Japan. So I came back here, just crashed, burnt, and I was alone, a single suitcase in my hand, a single futon on the floor in a dark room in the middle of nowhere. And I'm 53 years old, and I'm sitting on the floor thinking, my God, what is going on? And I ended up laying on the backseat of a church, absolutely gone. And this reverend, I'm not religious, but this reverend, he was so good to me, and he got me into an apartment, he got me set up, and I'm back in Matsumoto where I was before. And then I had the opportunity to speak at the Japan House of Representatives. And even though I was in that bad state, within quick succession, I got to go to the Ministry of Health for the WBAD visitation, which has become an annual event. And then I got to speak to a politician at a political campaign in town. And then I got to speak at the House of Representatives at a select meeting. And then I got to go back and speak to meet politicians in the upper house of councillors and handed out 720 copies of benzo information to every national politician. So how I managed to do that is just beyond me. But anyway,
if you can do that, people can do what we're going to be asking them to do. I mean, that is amazing what you've accomplished. Here's a question for you, Wayne. Do you feel, because of that original, you know, prescription when they, you know, gave you that combination, that had that not happened, life would be totally different for you now? That it really turned your life around?
Absolutely. I mean, there was many turning points. One turning point was that. The other turning point was where I decided to set up World Benzodiazepine Awareness Day instead of finishing my book. The other turning point was coming back to Japan here now, where I got to speak at the House of Representatives. And incidentally, it was all filmed in broadcast quality by a professional cameraman. And I'm working on that now, and I've decided to put together a self-made documentary. So I'm working on that now, and I'm working on another video to release on July 11, which is a montage of all the speeches given.
And Wayne, where could people see, the documentary that's being made, or where they're going to be posted?
Yeah, actually, so I'm posting these on my own personal YouTube channel. It's just Wayne Douglas YouTube channel. Yeah, I think if you search, you should come up with it. So.
Okay, good. Yeah. So one of the things I want to mention is that you've now done a few podcasts with Dr. Peter Breggin, which is great because it just keeps getting the word out there. So with your work in Japan and your podcast, you would think that there was more awareness now about benzodiazepines. Yet we know, especially with the pandemic, prescriptions are rising. I know I'm frustrated. How do you feel after all these years that something as simple as informed consent would help a person to think twice about taking their prescription and looking into it further?
Well, the longer I do this campaigning and this work, the more I realize just how ingrained it is in society, all this drug taking. And it must be just years and years and years of manufacturing and marketing by the drug companies that has just got this so ingrained in society. I mean, they've got doctors brainwashed. They've got all of society brainwashed and all through all their marketing strategies. And man, we're only scratching the surface, but still I believe that education and awareness is the key, and that's what WBAD is all about. It's about getting the message out there. So it's very hard when you're locking horns with the likes of politicians and stuff, and there's very various levels at which you can approach the issue, but it's good to have an all-out approach, but I guess grassroots education and awareness, and that's what WBAD's about. So it's an initiative by the people for the people. So by all means, let's get involved on July 11. It's our day. It's our day to be heard.
Right. Normally when I'm ending a podcast, I'll ask people, what's a crazy thing a doctor said? But at the beginning, when you were saying the things that here, that you're just at the beginning of getting your prescription, they're saying the craziest things to you. I mean, and that hasn't stopped after all these years, which I don't know. We try to make a difference, and I think eventually we will, but it's frustrating.
I can share another one. When I was in my court case, he says, it must only happen to foreigners.
Unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, some of the crazy things that doctors say, do they ever hear what comes out of their mouths? That's unbelievable. That's a good one. That's a good one.
But don't worry about what comes out of their mouths, because there's a pill for that too.
So Wayne, any closing statement, anything you'd like to say to people, because this is your day that you created, what would you like to say?
Actually, that's it right there. It's not my day. It's everyone's day. This day is for the people, and make the most of it. It's your time to be heard. By all means, just do whatever little you can. It doesn't matter. Every little bit counts. And thank you so much for all your valuable input and work.
Oh, well, Wayne, thank you so much for being on. I really, really appreciate it.
It's a pleasure. Thank you, Geraldine.
Okay. Bye, Wayne.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, Garrett, we just finished the interview with Wayne in Japan, which was kind of fun for us because, it's nighttime here in Massachusetts in the United States, and he's in Japan, and we were a little worried that we weren't going to get it all done technically, and it couldn't have gone off more beautifully. It was excellent.
Cross-Pacific.
Yeah, it was great. Wayne, and he was great.
He was.
And, he went through a lot over there in Japan. And I think the whole idea of World Benzodiazepine Awareness Day is any one of us that have been harmed, what's the first thing we want to do? We don't want anyone else to go through this. We want to make people aware. Well, basically, we want to make changes. We want the medical profession to listen. We just want changes so that no more people are harmed.
Right. Something I noticed during the interview, because I can see your facial reactions, is when he was telling his story about the benzodiazepine that he was on.
The three combined.
Right, so you were shocked about that. Why were you so shocked? Is that not common?
No, I don't think, well, we have heard many who were multi-drugged. In fact, even Professor Ashton used to say all the time, the United States and Canada, she saw more multi-drugging than any of the other countries. And that is true. You'll see a lot of the people in all the groups. It's number one, the United States, number two, Canada.
But in this, was he saying he had one compound?
Three drugs compounded in a satchel into one with it. It was like they put a
combination. So he's taking one large pill with all these.
That's what it sounded like. I mean, the horror that he's put on that, you know, because I never knew the beginning.
So would you ever have you heard of somebody doing that? Or is that the first time you've heard that?
It was the first time I heard that. Again, have we heard of people taking two benzos and an antidepressant and an antipsychotic? Sure. Again, it's terrible, but I like right off the bat, he's given that. Like usually when you're having a reaction to one benzo, you'll go back, they give you a second benzo, you go back again, they're going to give you an antidepressant. The multi-drugging, the stories are just horrific. But yeah, I mean, my face as he's talking, it was just shocking. And again, even though I've known Wayne all these years online, I never knew the beginning story. So I wanted to keep everything fresh that we were just hearing it as he was saying it. So, yeah, that was shocking. And look at the work that he's doing, you know, and being so harmed like that. And did it turn his life around upside down? Can you imagine how it would have been if this didn't happen to him? I don't think when a doctor, I think I've said this before, I got invited to go to Maine to speak at something one time, and I was too sick to go. I was still very sick at the time. And I wanted to bring Dad and you kids. And I wanted to say, when you drug somebody, that you are affecting this whole family. It affects everyone. And Wayne's in Japan alone. His family's in New Zealand.
Yeah, it's had to be tough.
Yeah. So, you know, out of Barry Haslam and Wayne's, Barry's idea and Wayne putting this together to do World Benzodiazepine Awareness Day, on those days, you start to see videos coming in. There's obviously time differences. For some, it's the day ahead. Then, you know, it could be the day here, and then it's still another day in another country. And you just see the videos going up and people doing stuff. Now, this year, because of the pandemic, there won't be any of that. So a lot of stuff will just be people doing stuff online. So it'll be a different year. But yet, you know what? You never know. More could get done this year.
Right. So in the past, and you can talk about other things that you've done for the July 11th World Benzo Awareness Day, but we'd had a resolution done in the House of Representatives here. I think we had one done in the Senate, too, at some point, right?
I think so. Yeah, I have them downstairs in, you know, I should have got them framed.
So depending on when you're listening to this episode, if you're listening in the United States, you know, it's a pretty common practice that each one of you will have a state representative, a Senate representative. If you wanted to do something like that, it really is as simple as give their office a call or write them an email and explain what the day is and what you're looking for from them. And basically, it'll be a parchment that would be signed by the representative and the governor of your state, and it'll be read in during an informal session, and it kind of recognizes that day. It's a pretty easy thing to do if you make the right phone call. So if that was something anybody's interested in, that's something you could do.
Yeah, that's actually a great idea. Everybody in the United States here, start flooding each of your states, call your representative or your senator, and get the resolutions done. That would be awesome.
Yeah, some states, depending on where it is, they limit the amount that each politician is able to do. Others don't. Massachusetts, we don't limit anybody. But if you explain what you're trying to do, usually they'll try to accommodate you the best that they can.
So let's just, so we understand that a resolution is asking your representative, your senator, to do a resolution based on July 11th, World Benzodiazepine Awareness Day. You ask them to do that, and they make up a beautiful, I mean, here in Massachusetts, it's a beautiful, not a plaque, it's on a paper.
And it becomes part of the official record of the state, too, which is important.
Right. So if everybody was pushing to get that done. Now, is there only one done for each state? I mean, for each representative? Let's say as many Massachusetts people wanted to do it. Could each of their reps do it, or is only how many? How does that work?
So, yeah, they could do that. I wouldn't suggest it, and I would say most states, the clerk of the House or the Senate would catch that before they did that, they wouldn't do 40 resolutions for one specific day. So they would do one, and then they would start putting more and more politicians on the bottom of that parchment.
Oh, okay.
That would be the way that they would do
it. Okay. But again, great idea that would make them really aware of the day. And we could do that every year?
Every year.
Oh, that's a great idea. All right. Well, I think that was a great show. We're going to try to get more awareness out there, and people are just going to be very creative this year to do different things. Garrett, I want to thank you again for a great show. But more than anything, we really want to thank everybody for listening and spreading the word about the podcast, because that's really helping also to get the word out there. So again, thank you all very much for listening.